coming to you live from the Chipotle on St. Martin's Lane in London's West End. From a Mexican restaurant playing ska in the background, the reunion of Reed Martin, Austin Titchener, and, drumroll please, Adam Long.
Yay, it's me, and I'm here. I just ate a burrito.
Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, whatever it is, wherever you are. Thanks for subscribing, streaming, or downloading and listening to us on your computer or MP3 player. I'm Austin Titchener, one-third of the Reduced Shakespeare Company, and you're listening to this week's Reduced Shakespeare Company podcast, number 297, Adam Long Returns. Well, he returned for just one afternoon anyway. Founding RSE member Adam Long came down to see us at the Arts Theater in London last week, which was a great opportunity for all of us to catch up and find out what we've all been up to. First of all, Adam started by questioning the wisdom of my turning on the microphone and recording the conversation.
So you seriously think people are going to care about what I'm doing?
I can tell you, in the lobby, people always ask, what is Adam doing? What's Adam doing?
It's true. And I don't even care if they care. I've got to do one of these podcasts a week. We just got to do this. It doesn't even matter what you're doing. Just make shit up.
Well, I'm writing series two of Mike the Knight, and I am the voice of Mr. Small in series two of The Amazing World of Gumball on Cartoon Network. So if you, and then you can just decide if you think that's truth or lie.
Do either of those air in the States?
Yes. I think both of them air in the States, I think.
Mike the Knight, that's the one that goes, oh, the dragon bites.
No, that's not. You're confused.
Oh, damn. Yeah. It's not a Bobby Darin.
No.
You're so silly.
What does Mike do, aside from being a knight?
Mike is a knight.
And you're Mike himself.
No, I'm not Mike.
You're one of the writers.
I just write for Mike the Knight. And he's really brave, and he goes off and he fights dragons with nothing but a bouquet of flowers.
So it's a little bit like our version of Cardenio.
In the episode that I wrote, he chases after Vikings who stole his dragon's pots and are using them to play music. It's Mike and the Quest for the Lost Pots.
Nice. And how did you get this gig?
Whenever anybody needs somebody to write about dragons and pots, I sort of, it's a niche market that
I've tapped into.
You're England's go-to guy.
I am. I'm the world's go-to. As far as I know, I'm the only person in the world who specializes in dragons, pots, and Vikings.
So the voiceover, are you getting into doing a lot of voiceovers here?
Yeah. The Amazing World of Gumball is pretty spectacular. I recommend it very highly. Everyone should watch it once or twice.
Well, and it's a great, voiceover is just such a great gig. You know, you show up in your underwear and it's all...
Yeah, sometimes they supply you with underwear. So I can just show up completely naked and just get supplied underwear.
I could use some clean underwear right now.
I was going to say, you do need some clean underwear, Reed.
Ouch. So people ask, are you still performing on stage?
No, I'm not performing on stage.
When was the last time you performed on stage?
The last time I performed on stage was when we did... The Dickens Abridged.
Yeah,
I was Charles Darnay, and I was Ebenezer Scrooge, and I was Dora the Child Bride in David Copperfield. And that was the last time I performed live on stage.
And how long ago was that?
That was 3 years ago now, maybe four.
Any plans to return to the boards?
I was going
to
say, is this a philosophical objection to performing on stage? You've developed a Howard Hughes fear of the audience?
Yeah, your fingernails could use a trim, I just wanted to say.
I haven't, yeah. No, I have, I don't know why I don't perform anymore on stage.
So you're not against it? It could happen, it just isn't.
I suppose it could happen. I just haven't. When the Dickens show closed, a friend of mine who worked for Disney just asked if I wanted to try writing some children's television, and I did. And so that's what I've been doing a lot of lately.
That's awesome. Great.
That's awesome. I mean, there are times where I kind of go, particularly on about the seventh or eighth show of the week, where I kind of go, there's something to be said for just writing this and letting somebody else get up there.
Those weekday matinees.
All right.
But when they do Mike the Knight live on ice. Yeah, you probably won't be doing that one either.
No, I probably won't be doing that one. I am 90% sure I won't be doing Mike the Knight live on ice.
Do you still, you know, this is our first time back in London. Well, 20 years ago, we were all performing at the Arts, and now 20 years ago, we're doing this. But it's our first time back performing in London, and it's really fun to be back. Is it fun for you to still be here? Are you amazed that you're still here?
When we toured, we went to a lot of different cities, and so I got sort of a taster of cities all over the world. I think London is the best city. I'm sorry to say if that seems disloyal to some.
Sorry, Cleveland.
Sorry, Cleveland. Detroit, it was a close run thing. But, you know, I really think London is fantastic. And we now have a very eccentric mayor who's put bicycles everywhere. I don't know if you've noticed.
Boris Bikes, yes.
Boris Johnson, he's a nut. I love him.
He's wacky. We love him. Sounds like Bill Murray.
Boris Johnson put a load of pianos around London a couple years ago.
Oh, nice.
He just, like, put pianos on street corners, and anybody who wanted to could just sit down and plonk away on a piano.
Well, it's funny. Dee and I had this fantasy of retiring to New York. You know, one of these, you know, when all the kids are gone, we'll just live in New York City. And then we spent 3 weeks in New York City last fall at the New Victory Theater. And after the second week, I went, no, I don't think I can live here. I don't think it's too whatever, frenetic, expensive, more than I want. But being here in London, I'm now in my, what, about fourth or fifth week back here in London, and I could retire here if they'll let me. I love this city.
London's pretty great. I mean, I love New York, too. I was born in New York.
I did not.
I had forgotten.
You should have known that because in my biography, it says, born in New York and raised in California with Texans. Haven't you ever even looked, all these years, and you've never even looked
at it? It's funny, I edit all the bios for the website and the programs, and I just glide. It's all just words. Just words.
Just words. Well, you could say Shakespeare is just words.
I do say Shakespeare is just
words, words, words.
How long have you lived in London now?
I have now lived in London since 1991. So how long is that?
I think that's 21 years.
21 years. 21 years I've lived here.
Well, and we were just talking that today, as we record this, August 9th, is the 31st and one day anniversary of the founding of the Reduced Shakespeare Company. And here we are talking.
Wow, that's amazing.
I know. Isn't that weird?
I never realized that.
Have we ever in a podcast gotten Adam's version of the story of how he ended up in the Reduced Shakespeare Company?
I tell
the version that has sort of, you know, been handed down by word of mouth. Well, it's probably like a big telephone game, and I probably have it completely wrong.
Maybe it's the right version. It's a very simple story.
Which is?
Well, that we were at the Northern Renaissance Fair in Black Point.
In Marin, California.
In Marin, and the year was something like 1982 or something like that.
81, I've heard.
81, yeah, could have been 81. And I was at the Renaissance Fair doing I had a stuffed dog on a rope, and I was doing acrobatic tricks with him. I'd gather a crowd around, and I'd do flips and backflips and headstands with this stuffed dog, and then pass the hat.
Well, now I see why you don't want to perform anymore, because you used to backflips and headstands.
No, it wasn't me doing the flips. It was the stuffed dog doing.
Oh, fair enough. I stick around.
So basically, I was just flinging a stuffed dog around and asking people to give me money for that. And Jess and Daniel were doing a four-person version of Hamlet with Barbara Reinertsen playing the parts of Ophelia and Gertrude. And in my spare time, I used to go and watch. And then at some point, very early on, like maybe the first weekend of the fair, Barbara broke her ankle. And they looked for a replacement. And on the bus on the way up to Northern California, Jess mentioned to me that they hadn't found a replacement, so they were going to cancel the shows. So I just said, well, have you got a wig and a skirt? If you do, just slap it on me, and I'll get up and do it. Because back in those days, I had a pretty good memory.
I thought you were going to say body.
No, much the same as the one you see before you now. But so I just, with very little rehearsal, they just put me on stage as Ophelia and Gertrude, and it went well.
And well, you did. When I joined the company, you were doing backflips. Were you doing backflips in Hamlet early on?
Ah. Well, see, now everybody says that, but I never did any backflips. I only ever did forward flips.
Yes, in the circus we call it a 108. Yes.
A 108, yeah.
Yes.
A 108 is a forward flip.
Sort of, you jump up in the air, and you don't go, I think it was 100, it's clown math for 180 degrees, but even that doesn't make sure. I'm not even sure that makes sense either. But yes, you jump forward, and then you flip over, and you kind of land just on your feet, but it looks like you're landing on your back.
Exactly. It was a forward flip. I tried doing backflips before.
Yeah.
I had a friend who said he would teach me how to do backflips, and I landed on my head twice, and I never went back to trying to learn backflips again after that.
And so, did you come in and think, was Barbara doing 108s?
Or? No, nobody was at that stage.
Yeah.
I used to just...
Adam invented the 108.
I knew that, I just didn't want to say.
I think I used to just go out on stage and say, I'm going to drown myself now, and I'd throw water in my face and bow and walk off, and that was about it.
Right.
I don't know when I started throwing the flips in.
Yeah.
That must have been... that was probably when we started doing Romeo and Juliet, which was a year later.
Right.
A year later, me and Daniel started doing Romeo and Juliet together just as a two-man show.
And you guys studied... I've heard this story, too. You guys would study the street performers. What do they call it? Neuro...
Oh, yeah.
Neuropsychological program. No, that's not it.
Daniel and I were doing Romeo and Juliet, and the Renaissance Fair was paying us $15 a day split between the two of us, which wasn't really very much. The jugglers were making like $1,000 a day. So we went to these jugglers and we said, can you teach us how to pass the hat? So they said, if you want to learn to pass the hat, you've got to go visit the obscene juggler.
This sounds like a movie.
It sounds like The Wizard of Oz. Yeah.
So word was passed around amongst the juggling community that we wanted to meet the obscene juggler, and we were granted an audience. So we went up to his pad in the Beverly Hills.
You didn't have to perform a quest or perform trials.
No, actually it wasn't Beverly Hills. It was more like one of those canyons that's up by the Hollywood sign.
Oh yeah, okay.
He had a really nice house up there, and he was like, if you want to learn the secrets of passing the hat, I'm going to have to teach you about neuro-linguistic programming and martial arts. And he had Daniel and I like learning how to break boards with our hands and do covert hypnotism and stuff like that. And just all sorts of little tricks to get people to start dropping more money in our baskets, you know, nodding your head and smiling at certain times. And, you know, when we had the ghost puppet come in as a sock, he had us paint a dollar sign on the ghost puppet and then rotate it so it was just flashing the dollar sign. And then at one point we actually painted a five on one side of the ghost and a dollar sign on the other. And people did start dropping $5 notes in our thing, and we experimented with it. We got to the point where people were dropping $10 bills in our hat. So, yeah, we improved our income massively with the hat passing thing. And then next thing we knew, we were off to Edinburgh.
Hi, I'm Paul Bynes of the Radio Tilling and UK Cardcast podcasts. I've been a fan of the RSC since seeing them at the Criterion Theatre in London way back. And like me, you're listening to the Reduced Shakespeare Company podcast.
Where can you RSC the RSC? We have 2 weeks left of our West End London 2012 Olympics run of the complete world of sports abridged at the Arts Theatre. We run here until August 25th, then we head home to tour the special election edition of the complete history of America abridged and the ultimate Christmas show abridged this fall of 2012. As always, the very best way to stay up to date about all of our worldwide performance dates is to sign up for the Reduced Reader, our email newsletter. Go to ReducedShakespeare.com and click on the link to subscribe and check out our touring page for specific box office, venue, and ticket information.
So when you were on that bus riding up to Northern California with Jess, had you been a fan of the RSC? Had you been a fan of what they were doing, the Reduced Shakespeare Company? And I ask because I'm in London and I was realizing that the only thing I think I've ever been a mad fan of, was Modern Problems in Science. Do you remember this?
Yeah.
Rich Fulcher, who's now Rich Fulcher, the Mighty Boosh comedian.
He wasn't at the time.
He wasn't at the time. And Dick Costolo, who's now the CEO of Twitter. And,
no.
Yeah, and Phil Gronshi, who is a doctor in Sacramento. They did the show called... Improvised show about a science course, and I was going, that's a show that I followed. I actually followed that in Chicago. I followed it to London. I followed it to Edinburgh. I was a fangirl, and I got to perform with them once. So was this a similar kind of a thing for you? Had you been a fan of the RSC, and then you got to go up on stage and be the women?
Well, of course, it was brand new, right? It was only weeks old.
They'd only done three performances of the Hamlet show, so it wasn't really a chance to develop any sort of fan thing. But there was this group at the Renaissance Fair called Cock and Feathers that used to do this show called the Battle of the Two Wizards, And I used to go and watch them every performance that they did every day that they were on at the fair. And they did three shows a day. I'd be there at every show. And I wouldn't even be laughing. I would just be watching everything they did. They were just so amazing. You know, every show was just slightly different. And they always figured out how to get a huge laugh. And they figured out ways that they could do a joke that you'd heard 100 times before, but it was still funny when they did it again. And so I just used to, I mean, that was the thing that I was really a fan of, was the Cock and Feathers show. So I'm like watching that all the time. And then it was sort of a few years later when I got a chance to be on stage. It was sort of like, okay, now attempt to deploy some of the things that you saw Sandy Grin doing in Cock and Feathers, right, on stage, doing this reduced version of Hamlet. And and the other thing, of course, that I was a massive fan of was the Looney Tunes cartoons. Yeah. I mean, I used to know like every facial expression of every character in every one of those old Looney Tunes. And my daughter Tilly now begs me to watch Looney Tunes cartoons and Marx Brothers movies. Tilly's really into Marx Brothers now. We just finished watching Monkey Business. And there's a couple just amazingly funny scenes in it where you're laughing your head off and you're just saying to you, like Tilly's turning to me and she's laughing and she's saying, "Why is Harpo doing that?" And I just say, "I don't know why he's doing it, but it's hilarious. I don't know. How did he even think to do that?" But
she's 9 years old, yeah?
She's 9 years old, yeah.
And were you also a fan of the Karamazovs before you joined the RIC, or was that later on, or you met them, the Flying Karamazov Brothers?
Yeah, no, we met the Karamazovs after we started touring with the Reduced Shakespeare Company.
Yeah.
But there's a big hippie fair in Oregon called the Oregon Country Fair.
We did that together.
You and I went up to that together, and that was a great fair, and that was where I saw the Flying Karamazov Brothers, and yeah, they're inspirational.
And then I have to ask you an apocryphal story, but I don't think it's apocryphal, about you. I don't know if you and Daniel and Jess, or you and Daniel, were performing on a stage built, this might have been a different stage, built by Ken Kesey, and you were doing the balcony scene, from a tree, and you dropped down, and you fell through the stage. Can you tell that? Is that all one story, or am I confusing?
No, that's a couple of different stories rolled into one. And one of the stories, we were performing at a little theater in South London, or it might have even been Battersea or something like that, and they just cobbled together a stage out of, like, press board, particle board, and I came leaping out to do some scene, and I just fell right through the stage, and the audience gasped, and I got to say the immortal line, "Don't worry, it's just a stage I'm going through." But the Ken Kesey story is, we were rehearsing up at the Oregon Country Fair on the Kesey Daredevil stage, and the owner of the fair brought Ken Kesey over and introduced him to me and said, "This is Ken Kesey who built the stage." And I had no idea who Ken Kesey was. I'd never read the electric Kool-Aid acid test, so I just sort of shook his hand and I just thought he was the guy who built the stage.
He's like a carpenter.
Yeah. Right. And I really regretted that I didn't know who he was when I met him.
Well, and to bring this full circle, your early fandom and lifelong fandom of Looney Tunes, are you able to bring any of that sensibility into the cartoons that you're writing now?
Yeah, sort of.
Yeah?
Sort of. I mean, there's not... The sort of timing that they have from the Bugs Bunny cartoons isn't so relevant now, because it's the way people process, especially children process information now, is so different from the way people processed information in the 1940s when those cartoons were made. So like a lot of the pacing stuff and the timing stuff is not quite as relevant, but that sort of surreal absurdism, you know, that sort of world that the Looney Tunes created where anything could happen. Like there's this episode where they go searching for the dodo bird and you end up in this world where like somebody can, like a roller blind can just appear in midair, and then you pull down the roller blind and there's a staircase on it and they just walk through the staircase and disappear up. Or there's that whole episode where there's just a bunch of musical notes, just staves,
yeah,
and a piece of music playing, and this whole sort of comedy drama is acted out with the musical notes. And there's one where Daffy Duck just finds every environment he finds himself in, somebody's taking a pencil and erasing it and drawing something else in.
Yeah, that's awesome. That's a great one.
So it's that sort of elastic reality that
right.
Looney Tunes started.
Would you say pacing and timing is now faster or slower, or it's just different?
I think it's just different now. I think kids are used to just sensory overload from a very early age. You know, things are flashed at them very quickly.
You don't get to have a wolf kind of going, "Ooga!" with the eyes popping out when he sees a pretty girl?
I don't know. Maybe you could. Maybe these things will come in circles. And I just think, like, if you look at, like, the Looney Tunes cartoons, something really terrible can happen to Daffy Duck. And he just sits there perfectly still, licks his lips, and his eyes shift from the left to the right, and you start laughing.
Yeah.
But it's like nowadays, things have to be so big that, like, Daffy Duck's mouth would have to drop open to the floor and his eyes right. would have to come shooting out right. of his head. And everything just seems like it's bigger and more in your face.
Well, that's funny. This afternoon at the matinee, Reed, I think for the first time I was consciously aware of that your voice for Ducky Worm Tonsils is totally Daffy Duck.
Oh. Yes, it probably is.
That's it for this week's Reduced Shakespeare Company podcast. Send us what you're up to via email to feedback@reducedshakespeare.com. You can also post comments on many of our website pages, and you can post reviews on iTunes. You can interact with other fans at our website and our Reduced Shakespeare Company Facebook fan page. You can also become a subscriber to our YouTube channel or become a twit. Follow us on Twitter @Reduced. You can find easy links to all these social networks at our website, ReducedShakespeare.com. Thanks, as always, to webmaster Matt Rippey, not Adam Long, but an incredible simulation Matthew Croak, music by John Weber and GarageBand. Our random fan shout-out this week goes to KG from OKC. No reason, it's just random. Special thanks to Paul Bynes, host of the UK Cardcast podcast. And thanks very much to you for listening. Farewell from London with the sound of the men's marathon helicopters going overhead. I'm Austin Titchener, 297-891st of the Reduced Shakespeare Company.
Any other verbiage?
Good night and have a pleasant tomorrow.
This podcast is a production of the Reduced Shakespeare Company, reducing expectations since 1981. Go to ReduceShakespeare.com for performance dates, actor bios, email newsletters, and so much less.
So much less.